moderate this evening. We're not going to talk at you, you'll be delighted to hear. We're going to try to keep it as interactive and flowing as possible. We're just going to start, I thought, very briefly, if I could ask Corey and then Charlie, just for a few minutes to tell us a bit about what they see as the key threats to privacy right now, and what you can do about them.
Well, I think that the problem with privacy that we have right now is twofold. The first is that our intuitions about privacy are very confounded. And we've seen this in microcosm before with geeks who were early internet adopters who found themselves on Usenet in the 80s and 90s, which was, for those of you who don't remember Usenet, it was an early relay message board system that was really what most people thought of when they said the internet for quite a long time. And people would post all kinds of disclosures on Usenet, thinking that none of it was being archived and none of it would ever come back to haunt them. And they would post everything from, like, man, Woodstock 99 was awesome, I spent the whole weekend in the K-hole, to you know, just stuff about how they cheated on an exam or how they were in love with someone, or they would say nasty things about each other, or just generally do all the things that university students do, because the majority of Usenet users were university students. And then a company called Deja News went online. Deja News had most of Usenet indexed by user. And all of that information that we thought of as a book on water turned out to be immortal. And not only that, but indexable and part of your life. And even the stuff that Deja didn't have turned out to still be around in some form or another. It actually turned out there was a zoology professor at the University of Toronto whose department wasn't billed for backup tapes, so he never rotated them. So he had just been back, just he had literally a giant bookcase full of backup tapes going back to the early 80s.
Well, let me just add, the guy in question, Henry Spence, was a guy who wrote, if I remember correctly, he wrote CNews, the first actual Usenet server software to get mass adoption.
Right. So he put the rest of it online. And all the stuff that he thought of as short-lived turned out to be immortal. We're on the brink of more disclosures on these lines. For example, all of you have your cameras out, you're taking photos right now, a lot of those photos will go online with my name under them. Some of them will have pictures of other people in the background, but they won't be associated with them. We're probably not far off from having pretty good face recognition software. And if you can find one picture that's labeled, you can then apply that label to all the other pictures. And so people who today are happily putting snaps up online and thinking, well, those snaps are probably not anything we need to worry about, we'll find soon that all those snaps will be aggregated and we'll probably have algorithms to find the most embarrassing ones.
This has been the case for famous people for a long time. A photograph you come across in history books periodically, it was taken in one of the central squares in Vienna on a certain day in summer of 1914, showing a sea of faces looking up as they hear an announcement that war has been declared between the Central Powers and Russia and France, and later Great Britain. It's World War I. And what makes this photograph notable is there's usually one face in the sea of faces that's
finger up the nose.
No, Adolf Hitler.
Right.
Now, we have been able to do this for people like that for a long time. The difference is going to be qualitative when it's something that happens to everybody. It's the flip side of Andy Warhol's dictum that everybody will be famous for 15 minutes. No, everybody is going to be famous forever.
Well, no, everybody's going to be famous for 15 gigabytes.
Yeah.
And right now we create, Bruce Sterling calls personal identifying information the smog of the 21st century. It's an externality of our networked lives that we actually can't stop. We don't have any way to carbon sink it. It just kind of, it stays out there forever. It's building up in the new sphere. Massive amounts of it, and we don't worry about any one piece of it, but as more and more of it gathered, it presents lots of threats. And I was thinking of a taxonomy of threats today, and I think that there's at least three different kinds of threats, right? There's the and they're all embodied in Brazil, the Terry Gilliam movie. There's the Tuttle Bottle threat, right? Which is someone finds you because they're looking for someone else, and they assume that the database is infallible. There's the Cardinal Richelieu threat, which is give me six lines in any honest man's hand and I'll find it in the reason to hang him, right? If you looked at every photo that was ever taken of you, would you eventually find one that would disqualify you from holding public office? And then the last one is the one that tends to take front center stage when we worry about privacy threats, but is in some ways the less worrying of them, which is the malicious actor, right? Which is the person who actually wants to spy on you and catch you because you're a political dissident. And it's because we focus on this very lurid threat, which is the Stasi hunting you down because you're an urban guerrilla,